Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I think we all have a natural leaning towards an element of nature. So some people are mountains people, other people are water, sea, ocean people, other people are trees, forests. You can love all of them, of course, but there'll be one element that you're kind of like, if you're struggling or if you're rejoicing in life, it's like you gravitate towards that. And I think it's really important that people go towards the element to which they belong. It's like your soul's callings.
Hi, and welcome to Alonement, the podcast about time alone and why it matters. I'm Francesca Spector, host of this podcast and author of Alonement, a book based on this very show. I'm also a reformed extreme extrovert who, a few years ago, discovered the life-changing benefits of spending time alone. Each week, I interview someone I'm curious about to discover what solo time means to them. In every conversation, we celebrate the unique benefits of time spent alone, regardless of your age, life stage, or relationship status. Because when alone time isn't lonely, it's alonement. Donna Lancaster is a coach and therapist, best known as the co-creator of The Bridge, a retreat designed to help attendees navigate grief and loss. She's also the author of a book of the same name. More recently, Donna has published a pocketbook called Wise Words for Women, full of advice on how to live a more rewarding, connected life. I know that we hear a lot of these buzzwords like authenticity and connection, but equally, I think there's a reason for that. I think that a lot of us are searching day to day for that person who emanates that gentle, universal wisdom, that comforting phrase that catches you at the right time. Donna refers to herself as a trainee elder, and in those she touches with her work, that's what she is. This is a conversation about how to find wonder and creativity in alone time, how to connect with nature, and just generally how to find a bit more joy in our lives through being more authentic to who we are. This season is brought to you by West Lab, the UK's number one trusted bath salts brand. Their best-selling Dead Sea bath salt range contains minerals that come from the famous waters themselves. Fun fact, it's actually a lake, not a sea, that's found in the lowest point of the earth and was the world's first spa, visited by Cleopatra herself. Dead Sea Salt is a skin hero, containing a unique blend of magnesium, calcium, and potassium, which is brilliant for protecting and repairing your skin barrier and managing conditions like eczema, psoriasis, acne, and sensitive skin, together with soothing any aching muscles. I'm also kind of in love with magnesium for its mood-balancing qualities. It's nice to think that your mind and body are being looked after while you're soaking there in the tub. West Lab Dead Sea Bath Salts are vegan, cruelty-free, and suitable for the whole family, including babies aged 3 months and up. Use the code ALONEMENT15 for 15% off when you spend £10 or more. T's and C's in the show notes. When we were emailing ahead of this recording, you wrote to me and you said, alone is where I meet myself. Could you tell me more about that interpretation?
Sure. I mean, when you ask the question, you know, what does alone mean to you? And that was what immediately popped up, that alone is where I meet myself. And I guess what I meant by that was, like, we, no matter how authentic we are, Francesca, we to some degree play a series of roles in our life. And so I'm a grandmother, I'm a mother, I'm a sister, I'm a friend, you know, I'm a work colleague, etc. And they're all part of who I am, but there's also a role element to it. And so when I'm not with any of those people and not in any of those roles, I meet myself. I meet myself separate from the roles that we have as part of being in connection with others.
That's so interesting. Yeah. It's really nice when people say, maybe a little bit idealistically, oh, I can just be myself around that person, or, like, you know, or we can be sort of alone together. But there's always, even if it's just, I don't know, 5% of you, there's always something that we're mediating for that other person. Even if we're just sort of moving to make space for them on the physical couch, something like that.
Yes.
It's never, never quite that simple.
It's true. It's like with, you know, with my daughters, I am as authentic as I would be with you. And I never forget that I'm their mother. So there's an element of being in a role as a mother. I've always got that sense, you know, that I carried them inside me. I gave them life. I birthed them. I raised them. And that is, that impacts how I behave in an authentic way. But still, there's a percent, as you say, of me that is in that role as a mother. And just when I'm alone, I just don't, it's a freedom from that. Not that it's hard either. I'm not saying, oh, it's hard to be a mother. I love being a mother and a grandmother, as an example. I love my friends. It's not about that, but it's just there's something when I'm alone that I truly, it's like an exhalation, you know, it's like, oh, I'm myself. And that also helps. I'm an introvert that, you know, I like spending time by myself.
And has that always been the case? I mean, I'm thinking specifically about people who aren't necessarily comfortable in their own company. And maybe that's something you've experienced at some point in your life. Has it always been where you've met yourself, or have you ever met something a bit different in your alone time? Yeah.
Very much so. Very different. No, I think for many, many years, I couldn't bear to be alone. And it took me many, many years to meet myself before I could. And I needed to be alone, by the way, to meet myself. But I would run from myself because I was terrified of what I would find. That if I stopped, you know, in my sort of 20s and probably in my teens, even younger, if I stopped pretending to be all these different versions of myself, like if I actually sat with myself, sat with my feelings, like who would be left, you know, and under all those masks, like who would I find? And would she even be nice? And would I really want to hang there, you know? And it was because I was consumed by self-loathing for the very long early part of my kind of childhood and teens and 20s and into my, it was very different. It was a sense of, please don't let me be alone, you know, and I would go to great lengths not to be alone.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure that we'll get into more of why that was later on. But I'm really conscious, I suppose, with this podcast that does celebrate the value of alonement and how that can be a great state to be in. I never want to sort of make it seem easy or to make someone feel like there's something wrong with them for not necessarily being able to get there at this current stage in their life. So I'm really grateful for that honesty. I wonder, so you're trained in the Hoffman process, which, as I understand it, it's what focuses on exploring how, as children, we adopt the negative behaviors and patterns of our caregivers, quite often in a bid to make ourselves loved. How has that played out in your own life when it comes to alone time? Did your early experiences influence how you feel, or perhaps how you once felt about spending time alone?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, as you say, you know, Hoffman was a long time ago, and it was also one significant, but only one part of my kind of work and healing, because they're interlinked anyway, journey. But I think as a child, I spent a lot of time alone. And I felt desperately lonely. As a mixed race child, I felt I had that sense that I wasn't black enough for the black community. I wasn't white enough for the white community. You know, at one point we lived in a very black area where my mum was the only white person on the estate. And then we moved and we lived in a very white area, you know. And so there was always that sense of I didn't belong. It was about belonging. And when we feel we don't belong somewhere in life, really feel really lonely. The aloneness that I felt as a child was a really deep sense of not belonging and a real deep sense of loneliness. And of course, it came with many pains and heartbreaks and also many kind of life skills in terms of I became very resilient and very independent, which also cost me dearly later in life. It was there, I guess, the seed was planted to start to realize that alone time could be a time of creative expression, of connection in a different way. So it wasn't connection to other groups of people because I experienced quite a bit of racism as a child. So it was more my connection. That's where my connection to nature really began. But yeah, definitely that was my experience of being alone, was lonely in the very early part of my life.
I've heard people speak about this before. I suppose if you feel like you're born into one race or one community, and it's simple in that way, I suppose that you have that almost superficial sense of belonging. Do you think that the one that you've found somehow, even though moving through that difficulty of not feeling part of either side, do you feel like you found something more deep and authentic in that belonging that you've gained now?
Definitely. Yeah. I feel like when you approached me about this podcast and I've been, you know, pondering alone and alonement since you got in touch. And it's something I think about a lot anyway. I really feel like it's been a hard won journey to, you know, and a victory in a way is to get to that place of healing where I actually became, I'll say this and it might sound a bit, but I'm going to say it anyway, Francesca, which is where I fell back in love with life and myself as part of life. But that took healing. So I think the many, many gifts I gained from those early struggles, and there's so many, but that it really gave me that resilience, that resourcefulness for the alone piece. And then I had to heal, get to know myself, and then really lean into the comfort of being alone and also connected at the same time, because that's the thing. Is that in solitude and in alonement and is when we are deeply connected, not necessarily to people, but to a sense of, if you like, your spirit, a sense of the otherness of life, I would call the divine, whatever you label you might have. I'm not religious. I'm not talking about God. I'm talking about that which is bigger than our own ego, you know, connection to nature and on we could go. So solitude is connection for me.
On the subject of nature, so again, in our correspondence before this podcast, and it was really lovely to sort of have that dialogue going on by email just before, you highlighted a piece of writing specifically from your book, Wise Words for Women, which is a series of shorter pieces of writing. It's called The Lonely Cloak, and you talk about experiencing feelings of loneliness behind screens or in crowded rooms. And as an antidote to this, as an antidote to feeling that sort of loneliness, even around people, you say that you head out into, and I think you use the phrase, a different kind of crowd. Ah, being among nature and in the sea, and you have this feeling of wholeness, of oneness with these elements. Could you tell me more about that understanding that you reached as a remedy for loneliness?
Yeah, like I've said to you before in our exchange, and I'm sure you've heard in many of your interviews for your podcast, is that the loneliest I've ever felt is in a toxic relationship. And I've had a few of those. and there's also a sort of existential loneliness that I get when I'm with people I love. And I feel, this might be a bit deep, but I feel like I'm trapped inside my body and I can't quite reach them because they're over there and I'm here and I know we belong and we're one. It's a different kind of loneliness that I feel sometimes when I'm with people that I really want to spend time with. But sometimes, like everybody, you know, I feel lonely, usually when I've been hanging out with people. And then I do head out into nature. And this kind of harks back to my early childhood where I began to connect to nature through making dens and hiding in the bushes. And I used to basically bunk off. I don't know if they call it that anymore, but I used to bunk off school. And then because I was experiencing racism, so I wouldn't go to school and pretend to go to school. And I had to stay out all day so that I looked like I was at school. And I would just make dens and I would have like imaginary friends in the woods. And, you know, in those days, it felt very natural to be out in nature in that way. And I think, again, those seeds were planted around me feeling that sense of deep connection to the earth and to nature. I have that now. You know, I can feel that sense of loneliness in times in my life. And then I'll just go out, and very fortunate that I have some lovely woods at the back of my house, and I'll just move towards the trees. And like I said in that piece, it just feels like they're sort of, you know, welcoming me. And then I'm like, yeah, this is my tribe. You know, this is where I belong. These are my people.
I adore that. And elsewhere in your book, you say, you write that if you listen hard enough, then trees will speak to you, which I find that interesting. I sort of want to go out and have a listen myself just to get there. There was a lot of sort of intriguing little nuggets where I thought, I don't resonate with this quite yet, but I hope one day I'll get to that point.
I'm sure you will, if you know, because you're already on that kind of deeper path, and you wouldn't be doing the work that you're doing if you weren't. And so, you know, this, I think that's the thing as well, is the things that I'm sharing. You know, I'm 56 years old. You know, I have lived a very rich life, and I've done a lot of healing work, and I've worked in the healing business, if you like, for 32 years in the therapeutic world. And so this is not an overnight thing, you know, from that little girl that felt she didn't belong anywhere. This has been a long and often was painful initially journey back to myself. But I have come to a place where I feel a deep attunement to nature and trees in particular. And funnily enough, I share this sometimes, and it sounds Looney Tunes. I originally wanted to call Wise Words for Women my little book. I wanted to call it What the Trees Told Me. And my book agent went, no, Donna, two Looney Tunes. I was like, yeah, fair enough. It does that. Because it feels like all of those quotes in that book, all those little pieces of writing, have almost always been where I'm with trees, when I'm next to trees or the ocean. It just feels like it almost comes from them. And I always joke, you know, it's not like the Wizard of Oz when they're like, Donna, you must write this word. You know, it's not like that. It just comes, I guess I get still enough to hear this wisdom. And I don't mind if it comes from inside of me, if it comes from a tree, or if it comes from the divine. I don't care, really. It just flows through me. And then I know what I need to write about.
Does it come to you in words, or is it something different? Is it the deeper sort of nonverbal wisdom that you're connecting with?
It's usually visuals. I usually get visual images, and then I have a sense of, I need to, because I write a lot on Instagram, and that's part of how I serve in the world, is little sort of pieces that I hope kind of comfort and inspire and sometimes challenge people. But it's sometimes in words, it's mainly in visuals and images. And then there's just this deep knowing. And I think sometimes I'm heading out, Francesca, I'll be heading out because I love walking, and I'm just getting outside. And then this whole kind of sense of what I need to sort of write about, it sounds grand, but it's really not. But it comes over me. And then it's like, I have to go back home and write it. And part of me is like, I just want to go for a blooming walk. And it feels like a compulsion to kind of get back. And people say, why don't you speak into your phone? And it's not about that. It's like it has to be written down and shared immediately. That might sound a bit odd, but that is how I work. I remember in the summer, you know, I was going for a walk, and I was going and taking my grandson for an ice cream, you know, and it was like this peace came. And I thought, I know that I won't retain this. And so I'm like, we have to just go back. We just have to go back just for it, you know, and I just had to get it out of me. It's really irritating. I just wanted an ice cream.
Did you go for the ice cream afterwards? I hope that you had a celebratory ice cream. Good.
Of course. My grandson would never have forgiven me.
And do you differentiate between, I saw it in a study referred to as blue space and green space. So green space being, you know, being out in the woods, and blue space being near a body of water. I read somewhere that they actually do have similar, I don't know how they measure this, but well-being benefits. But I wonder if there's a personal thing where you sort of prefer one to the other.
I think we all have a natural kind of leaning towards an element of nature. So some people are mountains people, other people are water, sea, ocean people, other people are trees, forests. And you can love all of them, of course. But there'll be one element that you're kind of like, if you're struggling or if you're rejoicing in life, it's like you gravitate towards that. And I think it's really important that people go towards the element to which they belong. It's like your soul's calling. So I feel when I'm grieving and when I'm struggling with life, I go to the ocean. And if I can, I get in the ocean. And believe me, I'm not one of those hardy all year round wild swimmers. I'm not. I've got African blood running through my veins. I need warmth before I get in the water. But I do move towards the sea when I'm struggling, and then the forest is more kind of, it's more like a day to day hanging out with my tribe.
I like it. So different elements for different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And the mountains are really, I think when I'm really looking for bigger picture stuff, you know, so where I used to live and in the Canaries, and I used to climb up really high, and it was that sense of expansion. And of course you can see the sea, but really up higher, get more of a sense of kind of, yeah, just more creative ideas, expansive ideas.
And do you have a preference to being alone in those spaces? So you can sort of have your own moment with the nature.
I'm always somebody that, you know, like if I do need to go to the sea, I'll get up super early so there's minimal people around, and I will generally prefer to go by myself for those kind of connections. And also, you know, my grandsons, they know that when we get together, we're heading to the beach or the woods and we're outside, and it's a different experience. But for me, in terms of that meeting myself, in terms of my bigger connection to the otherness of lives, yeah, I prefer to as few people as possible to be around. Selfishly, just so that I can really, yeah, really connect. But I can also tune people out.
You can. I can't do that very well. I wonder if it's because I'm a natural extrovert. So this sort of needy part of me, just my ears prick up and I don't know. Have you always been able to tune people out, or does that come?
No.
Okay. When does that come?
So you'll experience that at 42 and a half. No. I'm joking. I think it's that presence piece, isn't it? And that's what the trees have taught me about, how to be really present to where you are and to be present and in a way, like I can focus like you. I'm my line of work, I've got a natural nosiness. I'm always curious about who's talking about what over there. But I can go, if I'm sitting by the sea, for example, I can choose to focus on the sounds of the waves. And, you know, over the pebbles or the sand or whatever it might be, rather than, and I can tune out to that, but it's kind of like a practice. It's a skill. Whereas if I'm in a bar, say, I find that overstimulation too much. I really struggle with that. So it's not like I'm in that zen place in all areas of my life, but when I'm in nature, it seems I can kind of zone out of the kind of, yeah, the noisiness around me and just tune in to something else.
Yeah, you know, side notes here, and maybe this is just my own personal rant, but increasingly I do find it strange how bars and particularly clubs, but sort of, you know, noisy bars, it's almost, they're supposed to be social spaces. And it's just, it's very noisy, and it creates a sort of introspectiveness. Purely because all your senses are so deprived and you don't really connect with the people around you. I do find that very strange.
I mean, don't get me started. Oh, that sounds like a right curmudgeon. But I think it's part of the whole constant need for stimulation. It's like you can't go anywhere to eat without music. And it's like, why can't you just sit and eat some food and have a conversation with the people you're with or by yourself? Without there being, why can't people, if they want to listen to music, they can just wear their earbuds? But you know what I mean? It's like there's always additional, there's always an adding on. of sound, of noise, of stimulation. And I think we're a kind of, we're crying out for sort of less.
Mm.
Less is definitely more for me.
I'm with you on that. And one of the things that you sort of suggest or prescribe in your book, which is a date with wonder. And so you say a date with wonder is a conscious period of time spent looking at the natural environment as if seeing it all for the very first or last time. And it's also about that reconnection with yourself. So we've been talking about all these lovely sort of going out into nature. How does that look in practical terms? What would be your best advice for someone who wanted to go out and do that and sort of, you know, reap the benefits of it?
I think, again, it sort of links to what we just touched on around sort of overstimulation and the too muchness of life. We have too much choice. Many of us in the West, we have too much choice. There's too many options. There's too many channels. There's too much noise, you know.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And I think there's something about a date with wonder, which it really is about going out without your phone or turning your phone on to airplane mode and just using the camera if you want to take pictures to really zone in. But it's a practice, which I would say is a spiritual practice, because it's getting us away from this sense of entitlement to nature and entitlement to the sort of the everyday, if you like, is that we in the kind of chasing and yearning for whatever it might be, especially when you're younger, you can forget to notice the sort of small everyday details of life. I can remember an example where I was working with this very wealthy businessman once, and I'd sort of found out that he loved sunflowers, which I did too. And I'd got some sunflowers. It was like he was on a retreat that I was running, and I was working with him one-to-one, and I placed these sunflowers into the room specially for him. And I remember that he came in and he sat down. He didn't even notice them. And I asked him, and he said, "Oh, I noticed there was something in a vase, but I didn't even see them." And it was because he has too much, you know, and he'd forgotten how to be grateful. And that's the, you know, I always say that the extreme opposite of gratitude is entitlement. And so what Date with Wonder does is it brings us back into connection with the natural world or with the people in front of us. And you look at everybody and you look at them. It's almost like if you look at whether it be a flower or a bee or a tree or even another person in your life, but you look at them as if either you've never seen them before and you take them in, like when you first meet somebody, you know, and it's all like delicious and exciting, whether that's a friend or a romantic relationship, it doesn't matter. But there's that sense of like, oh, with the excitement, and you take, you know, you look at your new friend or your new partner and you're like, wow, they're so dot, dot, dot. And then over time, we get that habituation. We become kind of used to them. And then we forget to notice that they've got a really cute dimple in their chin or in their cheeks or this, that, and the other. Or we love the kind of lilt and tone of their voice. And so what Date with Wonder does is it brings us back into connection by cultivating this sense of wonder and awe. Like, oh my gosh, I've never seen this person before. I've never seen this flower before. Or what I do, which some people find a little bit on the macabre side, which is about around, I look at things and people as if I've seen, I'm seeing them for the last time. So I really think, like when I look at my grandsons, I think, what if this was the last day? And some people might think, oh my God, that's awful. But for me, what it cultivates is awe and wonder and presence and joy and deep gratitude. I'm like, wow, you know, I'm just so in love because this could be the last day, or this could be the last time I ever see this tree. I want to take it in. I want to bathe in the and bask in the wonder of it. So yeah, Date with Wonder is like a, you know, it's like the sort of what comes to me, it's like the crack cocaine of kind of gratitude. It really is the sort of real ramping it up, and it makes you just so in awe of life and the people in your life.
So I want to touch on wealth and how that can almost be a force for disconnecting you from this wonderment, because you mentioned that wealthy client that you had coming along on your retreats. It does seem to me there is an irony that quite often the wealthiest people can be the most sort of lonely and disconnected, and that there's now such an industry in these retreats of bringing people back with the connection that I guess we know is the sort of root out of loneliness.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I call this kind of condition, if you like, of the kind of what you describe is really the sort of Elvis Presley syndrome, I call it. And I wrote about this in my first book, The Bridge. And you know who Elvis Presley is, right? I'm not that ancient, though.
Oh, no.
So
big Elvis fan.
Yeah, good, good. Me too. So the Elvis Presley syndrome, as I sort of describe it, is something based on what his last girlfriend, Ginger Alden, she was asked what killed Elvis. You know, there's a whole big thing about how did he die and what did he die of, and loads of stories and sensationalism and all this. And so some journalist said to her, what do you think Elvis died of? And she said this very profound thing. She said, Elvis died because he didn't hear enough no. He didn't have enough people in his life that set boundaries that would tell him, no, you don't eat that. No, you can't have 15 cars. No, you can't sleep with 30 women in a week. No, he didn't hear enough no's. And I think with the wealthy, it's the same as fame and celebrity, is that when you get everything you want without deferring gratification, without having to save or struggle for it, or, you know, and you might have done that in the past, but if you too often, when you get a certain level of success, if you too often instantly turn around and your bed's made and you didn't have to make it yourself, the food's in front of you and you don't have to think about how to prepare it, where it came from, who bought, you know, who even prepared it for you, you just pick up your knife and fork and eat it, you become habituated, you become less grateful and eventually entitled. And so that leads ultimately to disconnection and misery. I really feel like people need to hear more no's for most of us. We need that boundary from others where we hear sometimes, you know, no, you can't do that. No, that's not okay to behave like that. No, you can't just press, you know, on Amazon and you know, I'm as guilty as anybody from ordering from Amazon for convenience. But don't think when you press that button for next day delivery that there isn't a price to pay for that. that somebody else somewhere is weighing in a bottle to get your deliveries to you on time because they're not given decent salary and a decent break. You know, it's all of that had the ripple effect. But when we get everything we want, whenever we want it, like many of us, even, you know, without sort of great wealth or great fame, we become entitled and we forget literally to smell the coffee or the roses or whatever the expression is. Both. That was a bit of a ramble.
No, it's amazing. And I'm just thinking of that sort of now very, I don't know, haunting image of kind of Elvis, you know, dying alone on his gold toilet seat. You know, that's the image, that very lonely, very sort of, I don't know. Yeah. That image of sort of overindulgence and all of that. Yeah. But it's funny when you're talking about that sort of those boundaries and that friction. I'm based in Lisbon this month. And it's a very, I love it here. I've spent a few months here in the past, and it's very funny because in the UK, there's this sense of wanting everything, you know, yesterday, wanting everything instantly. And here you'll go to a cafe and, you know, as I did yesterday to prepare for this interview. And I think I ordered a plate of eggs and it came 45 minutes later. And the little Londoner in me would be not used to that and would be impatient. But I went along and I thought, and you know what? This is Lisbon life. This is everything happens incredibly slowly. Even walking along the pavements, they're very slippery. They're these beautiful mosaic tiles, which are definitely, I would say style over substance, but there's something in that the whole lifestyle is incredibly slow and it's respectful. And you go and, you know, you're in someone's restaurant. It's more like being in someone's home. You know, it's that intimacy. Yes. And you appreciate everything so much more. You're not just sort of rushing from one thing to the next. You know, you'll sit in a cafe and brunch will take 45 minutes to come, and you'll look around you and you'll say, well, isn't this lovely? Isn't the music great? Aren't the people interesting? Isn't the task at hand so great? And even the ability to be alone in these streets, you know, I'm listening to the birds. I'm connecting more with the immediate environment because I'm not just kind of expecting how my day will work like clockwork. And there's a real loveliness to that. So I just did that comment sort of on the friction of the everyday. It definitely resonates.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful example, Francesco, of the need for most of us to slow down and it's not easy. You know, some people are holding like down three jobs and two kids and, you know, caring for their parents, et cetera, et cetera. But it's those moments, the moments of time of doing something with presence and also just carving out little pockets, even if that's sneaking off to the loo for a breather. You know, quite often I speak to my daughter, and she's in the toilet just getting her sort of breather from being a parent, being a mother. And she'll say, I can hear by the echo. She's like, I'm in there. But it's like just taking moments to be, you know, by yourself or in connection with someone you love and just slowing everything down as much as we can within the kind of busyness of this extroverted and loud and overstimulated immediate world that we find ourselves in.
You know, it's harrowing. It's harrowing how many parents on this podcast will tell me how they've had that sort of toilet-based alonement time or bathroom-based alonement time.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, you don't choose your sanctuary, but sanctuary, it remains.
It is, absolutely. And I know I mean, my friends know to sort of, unless it's their funeral, don't invite me to any kind of gathering. And that includes weddings, but funerals I will attend, but they know not to invite me. But if I do find myself at some kind of crowded event, it makes me cringe just thinking about it. But how I look after myself is I will retreat to the bathroom. I will go into the toilet and I will just give myself a moment to just kind of breathe, to just sort of shake my body and shake off some of the kind of over stimulation that I've experienced. And then I can kind of go back, wash my hands, a little cleansing ritual. And then I'm back in the game, as it were. Still got one eye on the door, but hey.
I think it's I think that I'm very glad that, you know, smoking is no longer a thing. And this podcast won't be sponsored by Marlboro Light anytime soon. But I do think the ritual of being able to go outside and take a breather, you know, preferably not a nicotine filled one in this case, but I think that ritual is lost. And I think it was definitely, I'd love to know, you know, back in the day, the breakdown of sort of introvert versus extrovert smokers, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people weren't sneaking off to the smoking area for some extra social time. I'll put it that way. I think
yeah.
moments of solitude that now everyone's sort of sneaking off and into the bathroom to have.
Yeah, instead. Yeah. I think there was something, I remember reading something about some office workers, and they were sort of claiming how much more breaks their smoking peers got. And, you know, not many people smoke nowadays, really, but they were sort of saying we should be entitled to that amount of tea break. And it's absolutely right. I think they were given in something I read, and they were given time to just step outside and get some fresh air without the smoking. And rightly so, if everybody else, I think they're with the smokers, were given an extra sort of an hour a day or something crazy because of their smoking needs. So these other people that weren't smoking said, we want that too.
Sure.
And rightfully
well,
so.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I think we're thinking about these things a bit differently after the pandemic, hopefully, where, you know, there's hopefully a bit more trust between sort of employee and employer in terms of, you know, remote working and not having to be at one's desk every second of every day. But the pause can actually reap dividends. You know, we're not sort of machines. There isn't this industrial age thinking where actual desk bound input equals output.
No, so exactly.
Much. But,
exactly.
But yeah, they're definitely something to replace the smoking break. Maybe even just the language for it. Maybe we should start sort of, you know, having contracted alonement breaks in our working days.
Nice.
Yeah, there's me like trying to shoehorn in that trademark, but
make sure you get some kind of what do you call it, profit share.
So one of the revelations that you also come to in the book, I think it's called and or something like that, there's a bit where you talk about how we quite often think that we need to be one thing or another, and we create false dichotomies for ourselves, like happy or sad, or we're funny or serious. But instead, you say that one thing that you've learned is that you're capable of being both things at once. So you can be happy and sad and funny and serious. And one of your examples is lonely and connected. And a lot of people probably, you know, listening to this podcast, myself included, constantly striving for ways to make our lives a little bit less lonely, even if that's in one area. So at work or in our romantic lives, we all have some sort of loneliness that we sort of characterize as a bad thing or something to keep at bay or at least treat. Would you say there's any value to accepting a sort of little dose of loneliness in our lives?
Definitely. I think to have moments of loneliness is like moments of boredom. It comes with its own gift. And being human, you know, in the world today, you know, there are good reasons to feel that sense of loneliness and whilst also, you know, the paradox of life, whilst also staying connected. But I think sometimes it's good to also just experience fully, like, yeah, right now I feel really lonely. And even to notice, like, am I in connection with that flower? Am I in connection with my body? Am I in connection with my breath? And sometimes the answer is no, and that's okay. And I don't think it's something to beat ourselves up about. It's when it becomes sort of chronic that we have an issue. But when you have those moments, you know, it's like I'm hardly ever bored and I'm hardly ever lonely. But when I am, I think, oh, it's like a shock to me. I'm like, oh, I think I might feel lonely, or I think I might be bored, you know. And these are alien concepts to me most of the time, but I don't run from them, as I don't run from any emotional state. I'm allowing myself to kind of be in it and just say, yeah, right now in this moment, I feel lonely. I remember during COVID and, I, you know, like many people, one of my Christmases was written off and I was alone. And I felt lonely for the first part of the day. And I let myself just really grieve and go, yeah, I wanted to be with my family like everybody else. And I don't want to just say, oh, but you're lucky and you're healthy. And yeah, all of those things are important in the gratitude piece. But I just needed to sit and say, as a person who wanted to be with their family, I'm deeply sad. And I had a good cry. Had a bit of a dance to kind of, which always helped me with moving my emotions, and had a good old sob, and then I kind of had a shower, and then I thought, oh, I've got the whole day. So I moved through into a different space, but I didn't run from that loneliness. It's all right, you know. And I think the other thing I would just say, Francesca, is that what many people are hungry for in their loneliness, they think it's an intimate relationship, or they think it's more friends, or they think it's, that's, you know, something outside of them. And what most people are really longing for is a deeper connection to themselves and to that which is bigger than us, whatever that means to you, the kind of spiritual dimension. And I write about this in my first book about soul sickness, you know, this sickness of the soul, where what we don't realize is we're longing for something deeper because we live in the shallows. So much on Instagram is about shallow living, what someone's wearing, what they're doing, what they're eating. It's like, you know, it's like people can drown in 2 inches of water. Remember that, you know. I think a lot of people feel lonely because their soul is sick. They're yearning for something deeper to life.
Wow. I think that's such a important point, because I think quite often we're told what the cure for loneliness is, or indeed it's shouted at us. You know, if we're single, it must be a dating app, or if we are struggling to feel that we have the sort of fabulous girl gang that is increasingly, I think, slightly becoming fetishized by things like the revival of Sex and the City. And I think, you know, it's very easy to tune into what the world around us tells us will be the cure. But I love the idea of sort of, I suppose, accepting loneliness to begin with, because I think it's a really stigmatized state. And it was, you know, I think it's wonderful how you describe really doing that and tuning into that on Christmas Day. But also, I think beyond that, getting curious about loneliness and thinking, what would actually be the thing that would take me past this? And I think that concept of soul sickness is such a profound way of looking at it.
You know, it's something I say quite a lot, is that people, so many people have rejected spirituality on the back of religion, because they associate it with religion. And if religion is not your bag, then you've kind of, it's like baby in bathwater. And people say, oh, I don't want anything woo-woo, and I don't want anything to do with this and that and the other. And it's actually, you know, I mean, spirituality is about connection, you know, it's about a deeper connection. And I think people are really unconsciously, like I say, yeah, they're missing that. That's the missing piece. That's the piece that, you know, you can lie in bed with your partner, with your children next door, with your wonderful house and your beautiful garden and your money in your bank, and you can feel desperately lonely. And it's because, I believe, you haven't got a spiritual foundation to your life. You haven't gone beyond the small ego into, you know, the sort of small egoic experience of life into one that's much deeper and lighter.
Finally, what's your alonement?
Oh, gosh. I mean, how long have you got? I mean, my alonement, it is all the things we've talked about, really. It is my dates with Wanda. It is my my singing. I sing by myself. I dance by myself. I bathe and I make it a beautiful ritual. You know, I love colouring. Love colouring. And it's something really playful, and I do it with my grandsons, but I also do it by myself, and I just love colouring. And so, you know, these are all kind of activities, and sometimes I just sit and look out of the window with a really good cup of coffee and look at the view, the beautiful view of the South Downs that I'm fortunate enough to have. And that's my alignment. And I'm like, I'm alive, I'm breathing, I'm still here. And that's a wonderful thing. So that is, yeah, I could say more, but that's it in a nutshell.
Before we go, I need to hear more about this colouring. Do you have a stack of books that you have technically for when your grandkids come over, but really they're yours?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's they have their own ones that I do with them. But then there's ones that I have, which is adult colouring, you know, and I love sunflowers, and I have yeah, particular colouring book from Rupi Kaur. Do you know the poet Rupi
Kaur? I do. I saw her live at the Barbican not too long ago. It was incredible.
Amazing. Incredible. Incredible. So she also had a colouring book. I don't know if she's into colouring, but anyway, there was a colouring book made to accompany her book, one of her books, can't remember now. So that's one of my faves. And I just love colouring, and I've got my pens and, you know, and people that sometimes I'm like at the airport or something and I'll get out my colouring, and it really, my daughter's like, "Mam, I'm at West." But I'm at that delicious age where I really don't, it's not even that I don't care. I don't mind what people think. You know, I don't care. It tends to be a bit more reactive.
Yeah.
I just don't mind. I think as you get more and more comfortable in your own skin, which trust me comes as you do your work and as comes as part of, if you're lucky enough to be around long enough, it's you just feel less need for external validation. It's just all good. It's like, I'm just sitting here, a 56-year-old woman, colouring sunflowers at Gatwick Airport, and I'm okay with that.
And life is going to get better and better. Thank you so much.
It really does. I was talking in the gym today and saying, you know, 30s were a little bit of a shit show for me. 40s, amazing. 50s are just off the scale. And it's like, as you let go of the attachment to external, you know, everything's doing its thing as age takes these things droop and whatever. But the internal celebration that I feel is, it's a worthwhile exchange, believe me.
Thank you, Donna. In your book, that you say that joy is contagious, and yours, even though we're doing this over Zoom, yours has definitely been caught by me. And I'm sure everyone listening to this is going to share in that. So thank you so much. I really hope that you enjoyed listening in to this chat. This was the first time I got to virtually meet with Donna, and yet it sort of just felt like a conversation with a friend. And that's always my favorite kind of podcast episode as a listener experience. In this episode, I felt like Donna gave us the permission to be lonely and connected, because one lonely day doesn't have to mean that you're a quote unquote lonely person. It's just something to pay attention to guide us towards better connection. Equally, I was really inspired to schedule in a few more dates with Wanda, to make time for that type of quality alonement, to connect with all the awesome things that the world has to offer. Whether you're a sea person or a nature person or a mountain person, it's just so important to make that time to get out and be at one with the universe. Anyway, thank you for listening, and do share with a friend if you think that they'd benefit from listening too. To stay part of the wider community, just a reminder, you can sign up to my weekly Substack newsletter at francescaspector.substack.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.